Mini episode 1825 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1825. You have with you here today three FDH Lounge original dignitaries, Rick Morris, Chris Galloway, Jason Jones, and we are the draft dream team here, of course, at the FDH Lounge year after year covering the pro football draft, and we are doing this here for 2025 and doing our preview show. We're coming at you live here tonight as a little bit of a test run for next week. Normally, we do a preview show and a review show. This year, we're going live as well. So this is the first part of the bread and the old sandwich here. The before, we'll have the after bread sometime that weekend, but live on night one. And again, a reversion back to the old days here when we first started doing the show at the Sports Talk Network, getting to go live and do this. So both of you guys, it's tremendous to have you on. Chris, I've had you on doing the video here previously with us. I know it's Jason's first time back on the video here tonight. But Chris, thank you for being here.
Be here as always. You know, the NFL draft is one of our favorites.
That's right. That's right. It's always a great thing. Jason, great to have you on as well here. We cannot do the NFL draft stuff without you. So I know you've been battling some technical issues here tonight. Thank you very much for being here.
Yeah. No, it's no big deal. you know, you set down the laptop and you try to do the basic thing. And then he goes, no, that's not happening.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
So it was a fun 5 minutes, but. Yeah, this is like Chris said, we get up for this. I don't want to be too cocky, but I know every year we're surveying the landscape, and I just finished watching Dane Brugler do a segment, mm-hmm. Locally, of course. I agree with him most of the time. Let's just say that there's been some stuff this year where it just feels different and it feels like everyone's focused on the wrong stuff, but that's why we're here, to give you a wider view and not look at only what's going to happen in the top three picks.
Absolutely. So we're going to cover as much as we need to with the first round here tonight and beyond, really. We can kind of get into things beyond that as well. And again, I've kind of left it to you guys as kind of discretion as far as what we get into tonight, how much we cover it. I think we'll have a much better feel for this next year, because this is our first year, again, of going live since, again, I think back to the old Sports Talk Network days here, and really the first long stretch of broadcasting where Jason and I interacted, 2005, the day-long thing there. I was in, I think, primarily with the Reality Check guys, Ron Glasnap and the late, great Dave Adams. We were doing a segment here. Jason was in with some of the other daytime folks there as well. 2006, Jason and I famously on that Saturday, back when it still was on Saturday, I think it was 7:30 in the morning to 9:30 at night, 14 hours. And we just kept going, man. Two guys who can talk for 14 hours, that's us. Thankfully, we got a couple of pee breaks along the way. Didn't have to use Gatorade jugs the way we may have to next Thursday, but there will be no real breaks then. Albeit, I can be discreet as far as how I move the camera around from space to space, and that may have to come into play next week as we go through our marathon here. Chris and I actually doing a live one here. What? I think it was in 2020. I think we did a live one on Facebook. And that was one where you and I managed to be the guys with the iron bladders, Chris, because we made it all the way through.
I tell you what, they ought to, you know, they ought to put that at the combine.
Yeah. I mean, that was.
I don't care about your shuttle. How much liquid can you hold and how long can you hold it?
Yeah, and that was 5 years ago on my prostate. So basically, I'd probably have to pretty much dehydrate myself to make it through. But I will do that if I need to for the cause, for the team.
I got to tell you, though, that draft remains my favorite of all time because it was all Zoom, Facebook, internet, Roger Goodell in his basement with his M&Ms in his leather chair. I swear to God, I think that was such a winner. I know that they're getting a lot of great, you know, play out of moving from city to city and all the production. And, you know, I mean, I went to the one in Cleveland in 21, the pandemic one, and it stunk. We got robbed because of all the restrictions. But, man, that one in 2020 in the basement, everything over Zoom, was awesome. And I think they ought to find a way to go back to that in some way.
Yeah, that was for maybe a 10-year reenactment in 2030. But, you know, our boy Joey B, the honorary Bobcat, holding up the 740 T-shirt. You know, you got to like that. There were a lot of great things along the way with that draft. And us second-guessing.
That Wuhan Institute's got to get working on the next virus so we can force an NFL draft back into the basement.
That's right. Get cracking in that lab, boys. We got to send Fauci over there so he can get working on it and do it so we can have another type of quarantine draft. We called it in real time. Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson. Big mistake. Now, again, the Eagles found a way to surmount that and get past that. Two Super Bowl appearances since then, one win. But that's what forced them to I'm not going to say overpay, but you're paying market value for A.J. Brown. That's what you're forced to do is go out there and allocate that instead of they could have had Justin Jefferson on a rookie deal. But Howie Roseman taketh away, I guess. And that 2020 draft, Jason, that was a really, really memorable one for a number of reasons.
Yeah, what's funny about that is, Chris, you just tiptoed right up against one of my biggest hot takes in all of sports. And I hate to separate the players from the non-players, and I obviously do not look like anyone who was ever a player, but once upon a time, the bubble – the NBA bubble for anyone who ever played on any level was the greatest form of NBA basketball we've ever had. And it's because all the stuff was missing. It reminds you of what it was like when you would go and sit in the bleachers because the JV game was going on or the freshman team was going on. And you would just sit and watch and wait till it was your turn. And when that game was over, then you'd be up, right? But the squeaks of the sneakers, the net hitting the box, the basketball, all of that devoid of the fans. The announcing was minimal. The fans did not exist. You weren't waiting for the applause to settle down. And right. That, to me, felt like the most purest form of basketball that, at least for me, I've ever experienced. So when people complain about the bubble, I'm always quick to say that was the most enjoyable watching basketball I've ever had at the NFL level. Now, the likelihood that you could convince America that fans shouldn't go to games is not going to happen.
Right.
But to Chris's point, yeah, if you want to go back to the 2020 draft model, I don't mind. And just on a side personal note.
You know, it's interesting, Jason. I agree with you on the NBA and basketball, right? Like James Naismith would have loved it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I will say that, like, football was in the stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
It was lacking. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They tried to make up for it. Right. But somehow without stands in the stadiums with football, it did lack something.
Oh, it did. Sure. Yeah. And just real quick on the 2021 draft, the moment they announced it, I had already started putting money away. I was telling my family, don't even count. I'm gone. I'm taking my son. We're going to go to Cleveland. We're going to do this draft thing. It's a bucket list thing for me. And when it was going to be impacted, I was like, I can't even do it. He's already not much of a sports kid. So I'm like, I can't take you to something like the draft and it be impacted by all this. So sure. That was disappointing that I didn't get to see that one.
Understood.
And other stuff, Jason, and I can tell you it was terrible.
And I that's mean, what my fear was, is that it would feel like it was terrible.
It was, everything was sort of like walled off and segregated. And here's the other thing, like, wear your mask. And like, we're outside with very few people. The whole thing was terrible. The masks, the segregation, the limited numbers of people they allowed, the way they manipulated. I mean, it was just, it sucked. I mean,
well, and not only that, the
weather was okay for Cleveland, right? Mm-hmm. But at night, when it's dropping into the 40s,
right,
it wasn't enjoyable, right? I mean, it was a typical April Cleveland night, you know. So I had tickets for like all three nights. I went one night and didn't go back. I was like, mm-hmm. And you saw the attendance numbers like just drop way off, right? Like, I think other people got there and realized, like, oh, this stinks.
Yeah.
Two things that came out of that. One, as I've heard, the NFL has committed to giving Cleveland the draft again soon because they know it sucked. And
okay.
That Cleveland got the short end of the stick.
Okay.
So supposedly they're working on coming back. So it's not like we're going to have to wait 20 years. They know it was terrible for the fans here because of the pandemic stuff. So supposedly they're working to in the next few years to come back to Cleveland and to get us a real shot at a real draft.
Okay.
The other thing I would say to you is, having gone to it live, finally been there at it, it is designed for TV.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, you are, when you were there live, like, stuff's on, you know, we're picks ahead, waiting on the TV to catch up. I mean, it's so in some ways your phone's blowing up. There's this, there's that, but, you know, and they still have four more picks they got to do live with you to get. Yeah, it was not as enjoyable as you think it might have been, even if everything was non-pandemic. I would tell people, you know what, you like the draft. If you're a real draft nerd, watch it on TV.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, I had some regrets about not being there, but yeah, I mean, there were parts of it that I saw where I was just like, maybe I'm not missing that much. And the thing that you wouldn't have seen if you were there, although, you know, maybe if you were watching it on your phone or whatever, but being at home, you got to watch that great arrogant stride through the back of Mac Jones. Like, that's right. I'm the man. Somebody took me in the first round. I'm the man. So, you know, something that will be forever spliced along his career low lights for as long as that guy is alive, I think.
Hey, Rick, just for whatever it's worth, and Chris, to your point, there was a moment in time this year where there was an assumption that Deion, Shador, Travis, and any noteworthy Colorado player would be at the draft. Mm-hmm. So we were making plans. And okay. I remember that phone call with my boss and saying, oh, this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I wish it wasn't Green Bay, but I'll take it however I can get it. And we had a good 20-minute conversation. It all boils down to him saying, I get it. I know it's something you want to do. But once you've been there, you're going to realize it's the magic is gone. There's no magic to it. You're just a guy waiting, basically. So, thankfully, Deion is going to host a draft party in Boulder, so I don't actually have to go.
Okay. All right. And so that will –
that's a better deal than freezing outside in Green Bay, I assure you.
Yeah. Yeah. Which again, the way that spring is going these days, that is something that could be – little bit of an issue there, but since you started on this here, Jason, that's the logical jumping off point, not least of which because of everything with Buff Speed, everything with Sports Illustrated, all of your great coverage, firsthand, up close with these prospects. Nobody has seen Sanders and Hunter like you have. Nobody has covered them like you have through the course of their college careers. So talk about that. Let's just start along those lines here because you've got a situation where ostensibly it's going to be Cam Ward going to Tennessee with the first pick overall, and then it becomes a free-for-all on where the next two are going to go. Sanders, there's not necessarily a sense of what the floor might be at this point as teams have become a little bit less enamored of his capabilities. Hunter, there's a very, very high ceiling on where he's going to go because he is a very unique player, which is probably about 99% of the reason that he won the Heisman in the first place.
Yeah, okay. So there's a lot to get into, and we'll save some of this for the big show.
Sure. Yep.
But the long and short of it, and I'm glad you said it, because if you didn't, I was gonna. Especially for anybody in the Cleveland, Tennessee, New England, New York, or even Jacksonville market, I was going to mention, at least specifically to Cleveland, there is not another person on the planet, in my opinion, that is more prepared to talk about this with both the Colorado side, Cleveland side. And for anybody in Cleveland that's been paying attention to the local media, as I have, you're not getting the right story, but don't worry. That's why you're going to come to us. So real quick, the first thing, let's just get the Travis part out of the way. My default position on Travis Hunter in this draft, I don't care what your needs are. I don't care where your team is in their development, whether you're a year away or 5 years away. I do not care about the circumstance. You do not pass on Travis. Now, with that being said, I understand Tennessee's going to go quarterback. It's going to be Cam Ward, but we all know that. After that, if you're Cleveland, New York, New England, whoever, you just don't pass on this. You don't. I mean, I could sit here and get into all the details, and we'll get into some of those later, but the fact of the matter is, I've never seen anybody move like him. I've never seen anybody work like him. I've never seen anybody practice like him. And when you see some of the catches he makes on either end, whether it's offense or defense, there are catches that real big names in the NFL can't make.
Mm-hmm.
There are reads or jumping routes or mirroring routes those guys can't make. And the whole reason, it's not that God bestowed Travis with some superpower that no one else is allowed to have. It's because of how he made his way up.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is looking at this like Travis can't play both ways in the NFL because it's never happened before, and therefore, that's about the laziest nonsense I've ever heard in my life. The difference is every single NFL player that's played to date, subtracting what happened in the, say, 50s on back. Is every last one of them was put in a position where at some point a coach said, I need you to pick one. Travis just happened to be the first person in football history that we can remember who said, no, I'm not going to pick one. I'm going to play both. And whether it was Pop Warner, JV, high school, low-end college, high-end college, doesn't matter. At every step, he's been able to do it. So the first thing with Travis is if you're a team that plans on making him play one way or the other, don't draft him. Just don't. You're not going to make that work. And later we'll get into why, and I've got a whole breakdown on this if you want. But the long and short of it is because he plays both ways and because he's always played both ways since he was 5 years old, this isn't a big jump. It's just the next jump. So when we talk about Travis playing both ways in the NFL, it is no different than the conversation of, you would say, of with any other player, you're going to adjust to the speed of the game. Obviously, it's a step up. But it's not such a step up that it's insurmountable. So whoever drafts him, and I personally believe it's going to be Cleveland at two, you've got to go in saying, we're going to let him try. Now, we're going to throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at him, and we're going to try to break him. But if you get through camp and you've thrown the kitchen sink at him and he's answered the call, he's playing both ways. And I don't want to give Deion all the credit in the world on this because it's kind of just an obvious thing I think everyone's come around to. If he's a 9 out of 10 at corner and he's a 9 out of 10 at receiver and you're only playing him at corner and you can't move the ball, you're going to look like an idiot having him on the sideline. Now, we can debate all day long till we're blue in the face on exactly where the mix is, right? Do I think he's going to play 140 snaps in the NFL? No, but it's going to be over 100. He may not play every snap, but he's going to play a lot. And real quick PSA to every Stephen A. Smith, Shannon Sharp, anybody you want to list that's decided to weigh in on this, if you use the word sprinkle or if you use the word package, you're already wrong. Full stop. So Travis is absolutely a generational talent because he's doing things we've never seen before, and he's doing it at a level we've never seen before. And for the people that are not watching every single game, every single snap, you're not going to get that. You're looking at highlights. You're looking at SportsCenter. You're looking at however much of the game you watched. You're not going to get it until he does it. So the Travis thing, and we can go on and on forever on this. Travis Hunter is one of those players you do not pass on. He is, and I'm saying this, pun intended, more or less, because Kiper was the one who wanted to stick his neck out there. If he's going to say he's the best prospect he's graded since John Elway, that's how you got to look at it. The reason I and people that are pro Travis are saying it at the intensity in which we're saying it is because he actually might be the greatest non-quarterback to scout in general since John Elway, if you want to look at it in those terms. So obviously we can get in scenarios and what happens if this and what happens if that, and we can talk about that. And I'm sure during the big show, I'll get more into what I'm seeing at ground level. Mm-hmm. Why I feel this way and why it matters that I've seen him in public away from football and everything within football and what all that means. That's the easy part. The more difficult part is Shedeur Sanders. Now, here's the gist of it. I believe if you are a team, and we just use Cleveland as an example, that needs a quarterback to read the defense, process, and deliver the ball where it's supposed to go within the scheme of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think Shedeur Sanders is a great option for you. I say great and hesitate, though, because let's be honest. Even from my vantage point, I am not going to be delusional enough to tell you that Shedeur Sanders is better than Jaden Daniels or mm-hmm. Shedeur Sanders is the best quarterback prospect in 5 years, because that's not true, right? What's the base rub on him? The elite characteristics, right? He doesn't mm-hmm. do anything at an elite level, but he does a lot of things really, really well. The processing is insane. His pre and post snap is very, very good. He's got touch. He can deliver the ball. And the arm strength thing is actually starting to piss me off at this point, because we have to discern that there's a difference between arm talent and arm strength.
Right.
Now, arm strength is part of arm talent, but arm strength is not all of arm talent. So arm talent, and Cleveland fans should understand this really well.
Yes.
One of the things with arm talent is when that quarterback is throwing that 12-yard slant, does the guy have to stop for it? Does he have to reach for it? Or is it right where it's supposed to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that Shedeur is good at. Now, is he going to run around like crazy, avoid, seven defenders and throw the ball off his wrong foot 80 yards on a line and hit a guy in stride? No, but how often does that even happen, right? So the arm talent is more than good enough. The upside is top 20 quarterback in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Even in my circles, I'm not hearing anybody say that, someday Shedeur Sanders will be, the Josh Allen of the league. Like that's not going to be the thing. But can Shedeur Sanders go and be Kirk Cousins or better? Yeah, absolutely. So that's the issue, is where does he go? Everyone wanted to believe he's going to go top three just because Deion mm-hmm. said that, because he said both Travis and Shedeur are going to go top four. One will go one, and the other one will go top four. I think it's safe to assume neither of those things are happening. Travis is going to go two. Travis goes three, worst-case scenario, and I'm not even willing to accept that's a possibility. And Shedeur could go anywhere from, 9 to 21 right now? So Shedeur Sanders is a very good prospect. He's just not an all-time prospect. And if you think you need Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, then you probably shouldn't be picking him. But if you just need, like Cleveland right now, coming out of the Deshaun Watson nonsense, if all you need is a quarterback that can do essentially what Joe Flacco can do at 40, then he's perfectly fine, which is why I expect him to go in the first round. I expect him to go top half. And that's also incorporating the possibility of teams trading back in. Mm-hmm. But we're not in that space where we think he's going top three anymore. And I'm not even going to say that. And now we can get into all the little stuff that Shedeur does and what he's great at and what he's not great at. But the one thing I want to point out here for this show, as this is a preparatory situation,
mm-hmm.
there are a couple things with Shedeur that I need people to be better about. This is nothing to do with access. This has nothing to do with the fact that I'm in Boulder every week and I'm seeing this stuff up close. This is analysis 101 stuff.
Okay.
Does Shador have a problem holding on to the ball too long? Yes, but is that a product of stat padding or preserving draft stock? 1,000% that is. The padding the ball thing I'm going to throw out. Oh, okay. What I'm not going to throw out, though, is do either of you remember ever seeing him play just isn't there? It's just not there. Let's throw it away. Have you seen Shador Sanders throw the ball out of the sideline just to not take a loss and play the next down?
Not too much.
No. I don't think we have ever one time, and it was 2023, and it looked like it hurt him to do it because mm-hmm. that's the same thing. Is he doesn't want to throw the ball away because throwing the ball away adversely affects his completion percentage. That's a real thing. Wanting to be the highest completion percentage quarterback in the class was absolutely a goal achieved. Okay. And then does he invite sacks? Yes. But again, all three of those things are all about he has to get drafted at a certain level. So my hunch, I can't guarantee this, my feeling is that when he's in the NFL and when it's about becoming a solid starting quarterback, you're going to see most of that go away. Now, the throwing the ball away thing might still be sanity there, but I don't think he's going to take as many sacks. I don't think he's going to hold on to the ball as long. Because all of that to me just has always felt like that was about draft stock. Now,
very interesting. Okay.
Yeah. These are things that people are not talking about. And the reason I have an issue with it is I feel like if you're watching the tape, you can see it. You can literally see him back there and realize there's nothing open. Why are you still running around?
Well, right.
Why are you faking like you're just run out of bounds or throw it away? And it happens so consistently that the only way I can come out of that is it's draft stock. So that's essentially the gist I want to give you right now is that some of the things he's getting dragged for kind of don't make sense and are probably draft related.
Okay.
Things he's not great at. Yeah. But look around the league. Tom Brady didn't have an elite arm. Peyton Manning didn't have an elite arm. And then the last thing I'll say on Shador and we can move on is the Colorado / Big 12 element. This is my favorite. And I almost wish I could dare ESPN to have me on one of their shows so I could drag the entire narrative. There is this notion that ESPN and even FS1 to some degree, they are under this delusion that all the greatest quarterbacks of the last 25 years came from Alabama, Ohio State, Texas, Oklahoma, or USC. And the fun exercise, and all the viewers at home can do this on their own. It's not hard. Go ahead and Google the best quarterbacks of the last 25 years. You know what you're going to find? And it's almost unconditional. They either were at a great program that was not playing well, or they were at a bad program that was not really noteworthy. Okay. Tom Brady was a nobody at Michigan. Peyton Manning couldn't beat anybody at Tennessee. Drew Brees was a second-round pick out of Purdue who was nice, but who cares? It was Purdue, and Purdue isn't a power of any kind, right?
Yeah.
Going. Josh Allen, Wyoming. Patrick Mahomes, Texas Tech. None of these great quarterbacks come from great programs or elite competition. As a matter of fact, what's more likely is these quarterbacks – excel at the NFL level because they came from subpar competition and talent around them. What happens when Josh Allen stops throwing at future middle school teachers and he starts throwing to Stephon Diggs or Gabe Davis or whatever? That's the dynamic here. So the notion that, oh, Colorado didn't play anybody, since when has that mattered to the quarterback position specifically? If you're talking about defensive ends, offensive tackles, running backs. Okay, you can make that argument because there's something to be said when an Ashton Jeanty goes and plays Oregon and looks legit against Oregon. Yeah, that matters. But when it comes to quarterbacks, this idea that every quarterback came from a top five program is laughable.
Yeah.
Anyway, That is my pre-show Colorado address.
Okay. All right. Chris, there's a lot to unpack there. I don't even know if you know where to start, but I'm sure you do.
I disagree with there. I too have gone through, at least when it comes to Cleveland, at the two spot, because that's where the draft starts. Early on, I kind of favored Abdul Carter, thinking, you know, the idea that pairing that kind of talent potential with Myles Garrett could make one heck of a 1-2 punch. But as sort of going through everything, I've you know, a few weeks ago, I came back around and said, I agree with Jason. I think Travis Hunter is a phenomenal talent. Things I like about him the most is that he's clearly a phenomenal young man. He's about football. He's about his schoolwork. He's about, you know, playing his video games. We saw a thing in the last couple of days about fishing. I think back to Joe Thomas.
The fishing thing is so real.
He just seems like a grounded, intelligent, focused young man. And I don't know how many years, Rick, you guys have sat and listened to me just pound the desk about, I don't want knuckleheads, right? I don't want cancers. I don't want, you know, when we're drafting somebody, I want good people. And, you know, every report, Jason knows better than anyone, you know, every report says he's just, you know, a glue in that locker room. His teammates love him. He's a positive person in the locker room. He's a team leader. All of that. Now, that's all before we get to the freakish twitch, the athletic explosiveness, the amazing hands, you know, his ability, you know, his ability to see what's coming from, you know, in the cornerback position, you know, what's coming at him from what the offense is about to run. I just like everything about him. I think that he is the kind of talent that a team like Cleveland, lacking talent, dynamic talent, and Cleveland, especially offensively, has lacked dynamic talent for 25 plus years, right? Mm-hmm. I can't think of a time when Cleveland had, I mean, other than Nick Chubb, right? Those few seasons when Nick Chubb was, God, we love Nick Chubb, right? When he was when he was full Batman. Who's the dynamic talent that the Browns have had in decades, right? There's not been a Tyreek Hill, right? You know, or, you know, certainly not at the quarterback position, but, you know, not, there's no Travis Kelce. There's no Tyreek Hill. There's no nothing. We've just gotten by with guys that could kind of get enough done for us offensively, you know. David Njoku had a great season 2 years ago, right? And, you know, there's talent there. Good, really good tight end. But Travis Hunter presents an opportunity to have a superstar at the wide receiver position and a superstar at cornerback. To Jason's point, where I've come to on this whole thing is, how do you not take that? I don't. Not taking him would be just that, in some ways, I almost don't want to say it, but it's so Brown. It'd be so Brownsian.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I'll say, I have real Julio Jones fears right now.
I feel like I'm watching film on the kid. I'm watching YouTube. You know, I'm looking at the games that they played and stuff. And I'm like, my God, like, you can just see it, right? He is athletically the most gifted thing the Browns could hope to draft in this draft period in the last decade. So don't pass up on a guy who's going to change both sides of the ball for you. Now, look, you know, this is the agree to disagree. I mean, the one thing I will say this, I am glad that if you guys remember a number of months ago, Andrew Berry came out and said before the combine, well, we view him as a cornerback. And that's his prime. That's where he'll play in the NFL. And at the time I thought, well, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Why would you, you know, that's a dumb statement. I mean,
right.
Is he watching film? then I now post, you know, the workout out in Boulder and everything, and now it's like, oh, we see him as a wide receiver. Okay, Andrew, I'm glad you finally came around. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to play wide receiver primarily. All right. I think the Browns are going to play him in both. I think to Jason's chagrin, I think any team that drafts him, and I think it'll be Cleveland, will start him off fully on one side and have packages for him on the other to start. And I think that's where they will begin and see how he does and see how he handles it and how they feel about it before they then look to potentially widen it out more and more. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's an unreasonable thing. I mean, two things to look at. One, I mean, you can't be, it's going to be really hard to be in the wide receiver meetings and the cornerback meetings at the same time each week for prepping for an NFL game.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing the packages that are going in on defense, knowing where his responsibilities are going to be in the slot or wherever they're playing him, right? At the same time, he's supposed to be in the wide receiver room installing packages there. So I just think that they will – I don't think they're going to shy away from letting him play on both sides, but I do think there's going to be one side he plays fully, and the other one is going to be like, all right, we're going to start you out with 35%, and we're going to see how this goes before we fully commit to the idea of you – being full-time on both sides.
Yeah.
Shedeur Sanders, I've never seen him as a first-round quarterback. I won't dive into it hard. He has a high floor. I like some of the stuff he does. I really do. I think Jason's spot on. He is your, you know, he's your draft him. He would be serviceable. He would, you'd win some games. He's not going to make dumb decisions. He clearly can read defense as well, you know, all that stuff. What is he going to be in the NFL? In my mind, it's like, we ranked the 32 quarterbacks this year, you know, last season, and he was number 21, 20, 19. Like, that's what he is to me. Like, I don't see a guy who's like, and the number two quarterback in the league behind Mahomes. Like, no, I don't see that. So I just don't think that's something someone you draft in the first round. Now, it doesn't mean somebody won't reach. It doesn't mean he's not going to be a good quarterback and have a long career and all the rest of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that that's the move for the Browns right now. There are some teams that's clearly like him. You know, they're talking about the Saints. They're talking about the Steelers, right? Slightly, you know, different offenses, but I think the Steelers are a lot like the Browns, right? They know what they want to do. I think Sanders would fit fine at the Steelers, actually.
And he feels like a squealer pick. He feels like a squealer pick.
Sanders would be a good choice for the Browns, right? Potentially in the Stefanski offense. And I'm going to talk about that a lot now and on draft night as we talk about the Browns and some of the things that people are talking about with where they think this draft is going. And again, it's also a theme for me with a lot of these mock drafts. People peg players for different teams and stuff. And I'm like, so often we keep forgetting about the coaches and the system and what they run. And does that player fit it, right? There are teams where clearly Shedeur Sanders does not fit. Does he fit a Kevin Stefanski offense? Yes, he does. You know, does Kyle McCord? Yes, he does. You know, there are some quarterbacks in this draft that fit what Stefanski wants to do. And I believe, and I'm probably the only person in the world that thinks this, I think these quarterbacks right now are being chosen by Kevin Stefanski. We heard at the end of last season from his people, from his camp, that he was very unhappy in his current position with the Browns. And I think that all stems from him having to find ways to make quarterbacks work that he was being force-fed. And I suspect there was an off-season conversation with ownership, and I think that's why you see a complete purge of the quarterback room. I think Stefanski put his foot down. I think that's why you have a completely different style of court. I mean, not only they're going to go back to his offense, right? The wide zone blocking, all of, they're going back to tight ends. We're going back to what we won with Kevin Stefanski and what he likes. And I think he's picking the quarterbacks in this draft. I think he's picking the quarterbacks in the offseason. And I think that they have given him a menu And I think it started with Pickett. He liked Pickett because Pickett ran a similar system at UPitt and ran it pretty well in college. And he's still a young man. And I think Stefanski said, go ahead and get him for me. Let me see if I can work something with him. Hey, the Cousins thing maybe isn't working out. Get Flacco. I worked fine with him. Joe and I work well together. Bring him in a one-year deal. I'm telling you, Stefanski's pulling this. And you are not going to see some – I don't think you're seeing Jalen Milroe or some other – it's not going to be Kevin's – Jackson Dart is – I don't see that. I think Kevin Stefanski has exactly what he wants in mind at the quarterback position. And I think later in the draft, the Browns will pick the quarterback that Kevin wants.
You know, that's a really interesting – way to look at this, and one that I'm surprised other people haven't jumped on, because I'll be honest, with Flacco and Pickett and a lack of immediate urgency, I did spend a little time there where I went, you know, Milroe sounds interesting. Now we're going to get to the end, but Milroe for a moment seemed interesting when you look at the idea that he wouldn't have to play necessarily. So you could get him, lean on the deep ball, the legs, and then hope Stefanski could teach him how to be better at the short and intermediate stuff that everyone's concerned about. But now this comes back to, Chris, your point. That's not a Stefanski system pick. Even if you can do that. Milroe's not – he's not the play action, stand and deliver – run through your 3 to 4 progressions and come back to center again. That's not him, even though when you just look at him in a highlight package or watch a game of his, and you go, I can see it in the NFL. But if Chris is right, and I think he is, Kevin Stefanski got to a point where he said, if I'm going to go down, we're going down my way. So we're all returning to that, I think. So while I'll get excited about the, could you get 80% of Lamar Jackson 2.0 eventually, maybe. Okay, that's exciting. But what feels more likely is they don't trade back in, and they sit at 33 and they go, who do we like here? Because it might not be quarterback, because to your point, Chris, McCord is looking a little bit more interesting. And as much as I don't want to feed into the Buckeye insanity, Will Howard in the third doesn't sound awful either. Quick, just so before we get too far away from the stuff, Chris, you mentioned something that I've been dying to say with you guys specifically. Going back to Travis real quick. To the Cleveland Browns fans, I want you to wrap your head around this idea. If they draft Travis Hunter and they let him be Travis to whatever degree they can let him be Travis, Cleveland Browns fans are going to look at Travis like they looked at Nick Chubb.
Probably. I would think so.
He will be their favorite player on the team. Mm-hmm. Whether he does anything great in said game or not, that's the guy that fans will look to and say, I like that guy. He's a good dude. He eats, sleeps, and breathes football. He's never a problem. He's quiet. I like him.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I think so.
Just wanted to say that.
No, I gotta say, that's why I thought maybe Milroe could still be in play. Because he fits the mold of Barry and Stefanski and their personalities, right? Mm-hmm. He is a smart kid. They say he reads defenses really well. They say he's a tremendous team leader in the locker room, that he's a great young citizen. You know, everything I've read and seen in interviews, Milroe is an awesome guy, right? And so you gravitate towards that guy because the Browns have been, they need a leader in that spot, right? They need a guy who everyone looks at and goes, that's our guy. And he is that guy. And he's a lot like Hunter. He's all about football, you know, and he's going to be a good citizen in the locker room and a leader. And my God, that's the culture change stuff that the Browns desperately need. So that being said, I won't be screaming bloody murder if Milroe falls to them at 33 and they draft him, all right? I don't think he's a great fit in the Stefanski system versus some other guys. But I can see those other, again, factors where you go, we're trying to change culture. We're trying to be winners. We're trying to get leaders in the locker room. We need to reset with some young men that are real in that regard. And so if they drafted him, I'll go, okay. I mean, it's worth the flyer, right? Like you getting the quality guy. Now, to Jason's point, can you teach him how to throw intermediate and be remotely accurate? I'm not sure you can, but you know, that said, you know, some team is going to get a really good dude. Yeah. And that may, in some ways that may be enough.
It may be. And here's the thing, too, when you look at it here again, we've been talking about this, that there's probably about 6 to 8 players, I think, that are sort of a lock to go in the top 10. And then it's really kind of a big cutoff from there. I've heard some people describe it as like 10 to 50 is a little bit blurry. I think that's a bit much, but it does get, you know, much blurrier after you get through there. Hunter is obviously one of the guys. Cam Ward, we talked about that Miami quarterback, one of these guys. Abdul Carter, as we talked about, from Penn State, the great edge rusher. Mason Graham, the defensive lineman from Michigan, in that bunch there. And certainly Will Campbell, the offensive tackle from LSU, in there. And I will say this, and I'll say this in the sense of giving a plug for Pro Football Draftology 2025, which will be available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com in the days leading up to the draft. As I'm getting Jason's, of course, Jason being our senior editor and the guy who was in charge of our player rankings from year to year for the NFL draft. So some of the takes that we're going to have, they're going to be a little bit spicy on draft night here. I know the scout Ken Bex has said that he is not necessarily feeling it with all the hype for Cam Ward. We'll be getting into that. And one of the things here, as I'm looking at this here, one of the players that I think is a lock to go in the top 10 could very well go in the top 5, and yet he is number 4 on Jason's rankings at wide receiver. Good old McMillan from Arizona here, who Jason has 4th at the wide receiver position. So that's just a little bit of a tease there. I mean, you're on an island with that one there.
I'm sure we will get into it. At the start of the 2024 season, I thought he would be receiver 1.
Uh-huh.
I thought Travis would be receiver 2, and then Travis would be corner 1.
Okay.
Now, this isn't fair to Tetero and McMillan, but the first thing
he's
I
just
looked
an at, X. Isn't he just an X? Yeah, that's all he is.
Kind of just a big jump ball guy. And here's my thing for Browns fans, that this means to Browns fans, it won't mean anything to anybody else.
Okay.
He's Braylon Edwards if he's but bigger. He's the guy that is going to stretch out, and he'll catch some 50-50 ball that makes your eyes pop out. Okay. And then he's going to miss, like, the curl route. He's going to drop it in his chest.
He feels very rigid to me when I watch him. Doesn't he? He's very rigid.
Are you critiquing his hips, Chris?
I don't see. I'm with Jason on this.
Wow.
He's one of these guys, though, that could get to the NFL, and depending on the parts of the route tree he runs, or if, you know, if he gets a good receivers coach in there, they can work on some of that stuff. But if we're talking about them on day one draft-wise, the fact of the matter that a lot of people aren't prepared for, and this was only, 5-10 years ago, we were saying this was the way. If you want to be a first-round wide receiver, you want to be wide receiver 1 on an NFL team, you need to be 6'3+, 220+, and run a sub-4.4.
Okay.
That is not necessarily true anymore. And there are guys in this draft that are small, or at least small-ish, that are going to probably go higher than the guys you look at and go, that physically is a prototype. Okay. So I like him. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, if you told me that he was going to fall and my team could pick him in the second round, I'd be excited about it. But we're talking about value and where guys actually belong. So I didn't reach this point until like October, but part of it was he's 6'4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Travis is 6'1.5. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the premier matchups. And in that game, I hate to do this, but Tetero McMillan had 5 catches for 39 yards, and none of them were on Travis.
Okay.
One of them might have been on Travis. So my point is, you know, it's kind of that thing where you get into comparatives. Like, I want to see the best receiver against the best corner. And when the best receiver went against the best corner, it didn't look good.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Now, we can talk in at length later on sure. the things I like about him. He's got okay. huge mitts. His catch radius is insane. Okay. He does do some amazing things you don't expect him to do. So I'm not trying to say he's a bad guy, but if you're asking me, would I take one of the Texas kids over him? Probably.
Yeah. Well, and we'll see on draft night here. And I know in particular, Jason, you will be looking forward to mixing it up with the scout Ken Bex. This will bring back memories of glory days being able to do that. So we'll see what he's got to say on this. You guys basically you and Chris, you know, just like a year ago with Caleb Williams, anti-team Caleb Williams a year ago here. And again, not a great rookie season, but I would say that there were a lot of internal reasons for that with the Bears. We'll see year two what ends up happening there. But you guys called your shot a year ago on that one. And, you know, in the first year, I will say as a Roma Dunze fantasy owner, I was very much disappointed with the way that their offense went. But in terms of any of the
other... There were people, not Jason and I,
okay,
picking the Bears for the Super Bowl because of Caleb Williams.
Okay.
And I thought these people were insane.
Okay.
They were the playoffs. I like, what? What? Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing, I have to say this now before we get into it, Rick, because you're
okay.
walking right up to it, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to say the loud thing out
okay.
for the crazy thing out loud.
Okay.
I can't go at Caleb Williams like I did last year
mm-hmm.
and then sit here and pretend like Cam Ward doesn't have those things. So right. if that's where this is going, my biggest issue with Caleb is every highlight play, the vast majority of his big positive chunk plays, all of which came off script,
right,
came off platform. And I want to, before I'm willing to say Caleb Williams is going to be the next whoever, I need to be able to see him do it within the system that he's playing in. And with that, my big sort of descriptor on Cam Ward is I love the arm talent. I love the fact that he can play hero ball when it's called for. Mm-hmm. My concern is he is off platform and playing hero ball a lot. And is that a red flag? Or is that just how he was forced to play when he was in Miami? But for the same reasons, Cam Ward's probably the best quarterback in this draft class. But then that brings in this whole other conversation that I know the Shador fans hate when you say, well, yeah, but what if we put Cam Ward in last year's draft class? What if we put Cam Ward in with every quarterback over the last 5 years? Yeah, Cam Ward's not going. He's not going to be one of those top five quarterbacks.
No,
he won't. If we're just putting him in last year, I will say I have him higher than most people.
Okay.
After Caleb, after Jaden Daniels, after Drake May, but I would have him above J.J. McCarthy.
Yep.
And we can have a conversation
above Penix. I think above Penix. And I was kind of a Penix guy at the time, but I would put him above him at the very least. I will say, too, when you're looking
higher,
mm-hmm.
but only a little, negligibly. I mean,
yeah, we're splitting hairs here, but that's the range. The right. what fourth or fifth best quarterback in last year's draft class?
Pretty much so, yeah. So in terms of any notes that we haven't yet covered tonight on our preview of the draft, when we will be live next Thursday night for the NFL draft, just the last note that I have here on kind of a lighter note is that I don't expect him to drop to 30 in the draft here, the excellent linebacker from Alabama. But it does feel like Jihad Campbell should be playing for Sean McDermott, doesn't it, Chris? I don't think he'll make it to 30, though.
And all the memes I always send him of Sean McDermott in some way lurking around behind a tree whenever there's a 9/11 reference. First of all, that would just be too hilarious if that came to be.
Yeah.
What I would say about this draft, and I can't wait to hear, you know, I know Jason's take on this, is that you've heard me say it for years that you build an NFL team with a bunch of quality C and B players, B and C rated players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got your A players. You've got to have three on each side of the ball.
Minimum.
That are able to then elevate the roster of C to B type players. And that's your winning formula on building a roster in the NFL economically, right? So you're not the Cowboys where you're always, you know, stars and scrubs.
Yep.
This is that draft, in my opinion, to load up on those B and C players. There's not much in the way of superstars in this draft. There's not a lot of superstar depth. There's a handful of the quote unquote blue chippers. And everybody else in this draft, there's, you know, when you look at some of these players and you were trying to rate them, you know, from, you know, 10 to 100, there's not a big gap. And so when I go up and down and look at all these different players in, I see a draft where if you're a team this year having a lot of picks, that's probably a good thing because you're going to get a lot of bites at the apple of getting some B and C level players that you can build the depth and build your roster. That's the kind of thing that, you know, from a GM standpoint allows you to be successful. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of draft I think we're looking at. I think there's a lot of guys that can play in this league that are going to be that B minus, C plus, you know, got the lunch pail kind of guy, and you're going to love them on your team. I think there's a bunch of those guys. There's not a lot of Myles Garretts and Patrick Mahomes, and I don't see that here. You know, but I think this is a roster building draft, and I would encourage, you know, fans of teams that, you know, really study those third, fourth, fifth round picks. Because that's going to be huge for your team.
You know, Chris, I think a very interesting thing that comes off of that I know a lot of people have not quite gotten ready to think about. We always go into these drafts like, oh, well, who's going to trade? Who's trading up to one? Who's trading up to the top five? And I think to Chris's point about this is kind of a meat potatoes build your roster kind of draft. Everyone's going to be waiting for that thing where, I don't know, someone like Dallas is going to trade up to three or something. I don't think that's happening. But to Chris's point, what I do think we'll start to see, and this is where that whole crazy pair Travis and Shador thing together came, is those good teams, those Packers, Steelers, Ravens, 49ers, those organizations, I think they are absolutely some teams you should be looking at that could potentially be all too happy to trade out of their spot in the first round to stockpile on second and third round picks in this draft specifically. Because if you're those teams and you don't desperately need anything, you know you can get the third or fourth best running back in this draft class who may be your featured back 2 years from now.
Right.
You can get a defensive tackle in the third round is going to be a starter. You could get a safety, a linebacker, but that's what we're talking about. This is not the draft to get the sexy picks or the ones you spend money on, like Chris was talking about. This isn't necessarily a draft to get your defensive player of the year, defensive end, or to get your elite wide receiver that is going to scare everybody, like a Justin Jefferson or a Jamar Chase.
Unless you're picking very high on those. You have to be picking very high to get those.
So there's about five guys at the top where everybody's like, yeah, those are the dudes, right? But after that, and specifically probably more so like 20 to 50, that's the sweet spot where you're going to get guys that a few years from now, you're going to be like, where did he get drafted? He got drafted in the third round? How is he this good? Because this is that draft. To Chris's point, this is when you stockpile up on the ugly positions, the non-sexy positions where – we got to stop the run. Let's get a defensive tackle.
Right.
You know, we need a weak side linebacker because this guy's always killing us. You can get that this draft. But yeah, this is not the draft where you're going to get a Deion Sanders, Jerry Rice, Joe Montana. This is not that draft.
The irony is the Browns are going to get that player at number two. And then the rest of the draft is going to be those building block bunch of tail guys. So I want to ask you both, because every draft – there is that moment in the late teens, early 20s, when we lose our shit because a player falls to them and they pick him. and we all love the player, and we hate that now they're a Raven. Who, I want the predictions. Who is that guy this year that falls somehow to the Ravens, and we all go, damn it. And then after the fact, we all have to begrudgingly go, I loved their draft. Who is it this year? I've got two players in mind that I think it could be, but I definitely want to know what you guys think.
All right, I'm going to stall and have Jason go first while I'm trying to think about this here.
All right. Trying to get his name right. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
Nick Emanwori. Okay. Safety out of South Carolina. Basically ran a 4.240 and put together probably the most impressive combine to go along with very impressive tape since a guy like, I don't know, Calvin Johnson, where you're like, that dude's not even human. 4.240, 40-inch plus vert, like his three cone was insane, and he's got tape to match. So right now, just shooting from the hip, that would be the guy that I'm looking at going, I swear, those sons of pick him. It would be like, who's the 14, the kid from Notre Dame that they have now? That safety that everyone thinks is awesome, and he is.
I love when people go pop quiz on me on the
air. Yeah, sorry. Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah.
Kyle Hamilton situation where they'll announce the pick and you'll go, how is he still there?
Right.
Well, they do need another safety back there. So that is one. Rick, do you want me to go?
Okay. Well, I'll give you ones here. I got two of them because I'm looking at some of the CBS Sports mock drafts here. So CBS Sports, this feels like in terms of a safety, this is a guy you would not necessarily expect to slide there. Malachi Starks. I would be shaking my fist at the TV if that were him. Having said that, by the way, and who am I giving credit to here specifically? Because this is a weird, this is like a mock draft on mushrooms. Ryan Wilson. Don't know if the dude was munching any shrooms beforehand, but he actually has Luther Burden III from Missouri, the great wide receiver, sliding to 30. If he's on the board at 27, the Ravens are taking him. So, hey, seeing Luther Burden go to the Ravens, I think we would all again be shaking our fists at the TV. So either Starks or Burden, that fits the profile, Chris.
One that I think could drop to them is, of course, the kid out of South Dakota State there, Gray Zabel.
Okay.
Plays everywhere on the line.
28 on Ryan Wilson's draft.
I feel like he is the guy that, like, they're going to get this all great, versatile kid, and we're all going to go, oh, God. You know, because he's the guy that I secretly fantasized could fall to the Browns at 33. And then the other one, and again, sometimes this is just because you don't know where they rate, and then it becomes also need. I could see a guy like Tyler Warren somehow ending up down there that people pass on him for one reason, because they fill another need, and then suddenly he's in an offense with Lamar Jackson, and they're going to move off of Mark Andrews either this year or next year. Like, that's done. And I look at a guy like Tyler Warren, and I go, that guy's going to end up a Raven, isn't he?
You know, as you started to give your answer, and I'm starting to think doom and gloom, like, forget position. Forget the guy that I think should go higher than he's going to. Just look at it from the standpoint of what would be the nightmare scenario. Mm-hmm. And the nightmare scenario is that they've acknowledged that Andrews is not long for the program, but they're not going to get rid of him, right? Mm-hmm. And then, to your point, whether they trade up or he just falls into their lap, if Tyler Warren ends up going to the Ravens, and even if it's only for a year or two, and they pull the friggin' Gronk Hernandez nonsense, where you're facing Andrews on one side and Warren on the other, even if it's only for a year or two, that is nightmare material. How to defend that? So yeah, to the idea of what's the one thing that would make you scream and probably, you know, run off camera and curse in the other room. It's Tyler Warren, and I don't know if it's close.
this right okay. on right on camera. What are you kidding? I'll scream right into this camera.
Because like the minute that happens, I would be like, is Ozzie back at the helm? What is this? Because that's exactly what it would feel like.
Well, let me bring this
guys. I was thinking about it this last weekend. I'm like, who's the guy that's going to fall to the Ravens? And we're just so angry about it. And those are the two I zeroed in on. You know, Gray Zabel, because he's can play every position guy on the line that you covet. And then Tyler Warren just somehow falling when he shouldn't.
Well, I'll bring this thing all the way around here. I'll bring this thing full circle tonight and say that, you know, in looking at this here, if we're talking about doubling down at a position for the Ravens here, I have three words, one big fever dream. Ashton Jeanty Wishbone. How about that, guys? You see that being a possibility? is that a little too weird even for you guys?
All right, no.
It's not weird, but it's going to give me a nightmare.
I have homework. I have homework for Jason, though, for next week. And that I want to get his opinion. Which of the two Ohio State running backs would he rather have in the Stefanski system?
I give it to you right now.
Because I've gone back and forth on it. I mean, Henderson reminds me a lot of Chubb. But then I look at Judkins and I go, man, that wide zone, the burst, I'm like, ooh. So
as of today,
here's a teaser for your viewers, Rick, and a little bit, you know, something we can revisit when we get back together next week.
Okay.
I want Jason to break that down, what he thinks, because I've gone back and forth on it.
Okay.
I think the short answer, just teasing, we won't go into it right now, but I think the short answer is if you're a Browns fan, even if you're not a Buckeye Browns fan, if you're just a Browns fan that is torn up that Nick Chubb is out there, and you just know that you need some sort of running solution, even if it's not going to be re-signing Chubb, it is probably the most complicated thing just to answer off the top of the head, because they both are so good, but they're both good at like nuanced different things. And as of today, and this is not my answer, but as of today, I would lean towards Henderson, because when you watch the tape, forget him as a runner for a moment. And I agree, he looks a lot like Chubb. In pass pro, that dude is nasty.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is something that would be a huge benefit for Stefanski, but I will take some time and give you a proper answer. But today, I'm at least leaning Henderson, but if you want me to put a margin number on it, it's literally like 51-49.
Okay.
I'd be happy with either one right now, but I'll get you a better answer.
We will revisit next week. I know the scout Ken Bex is going to have some thoughts on that one as well, but he will be with me, quote unquote, in studio here. I'll be having you guys on and a cast of thousands around the FDH Lounge here. We're billing this as a coast-to-coast show here. We'll have Ben Chu popping in from Portland. We'll have Derek Allen visiting us from Austin, Texas. Joe Stazak from Philadelphia. So a couple of our greats, Bob Glassman from Cleveland, will pop in. That will be fun. And a show in honor. We will have a dedication that night to of our recently fallen here in the FDH Lounge within 18 days of one another, sadly, Ken Detweiler and Anthony Patrone. So a show in honor of these great gentlemen, great friends of ours. And again, always great to get together with any of the original FDH Lounge dignitaries here. The best damn draft crew in the business, in my estimation. Chris Galloway and Jason Jones joining me as always. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1825.